Well, this was only my second South by Southwest Music Festival, and for me, it was the absolute best South by Southwest Music Festival.
Wouldn't you say
ever.
Better? It's your better South by Southwest Festival.
That's right. And so we're going to do a roundup. We did a lot of things beforehand. We listened to a thousand-something songs, and then we hoped to discover stuff when we went there. Now we've come back from this festival, and the we being Carrie Brownstein, who's at Oregon Public Broadcasting, and Stephen Thompson is here, and Stephen is a veteran of these affairs, probably more than anyone, maybe. And Robin Hilton is sitting with me. I'm going to start with Stephen Thompson because Stephen was gushing so much on the final night of South by Southwest that I happen to know that he thought it was a pretty darn good one.
Yeah, it's really a shame that Robin and Carrie both left a day early.
Yeah, what's up with that, guys?
Because they missed the absolute best individual music day of South by Southwest that I've had in 13 years of going to South
before
by Southwest.
We left for South by Southwest, and I told you I wasn't going to be there Saturday, you looked at the schedule and you said, it looks like you probably won't be missing anything.
Yeah, I was I was lying to make you feel better.
Oh, thank you.
And also you had told me about a month ago that you really wanted to rub it in.
Yeah.
Even if we have
to make it up, but we don't have to make it up.
Yeah, I was gonna make up all these amazing bands I'd seen just so Robin and Carrie would feel bad about leaving early. But I really just had. I mean, I saw Kanye West perform, and it was like the fourth most interesting thing I saw in that day. I think maybe in part because there was less going on at the festival that day, the fact that I was sort of free to wander around and discover new things. But the best thing that I saw, and ever since I've been trying to find a way to capture how. By playing a sample of recorded music, how great this band was. But I stumbled across a band I had never heard of called Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. They're a band from Los Angeles. There are 10 members. And they played a party thrown by Rachel Ray, who knows how to curate a party. At the heart of the group were a male and female singer who much of the time just sang straight into each other's faces with incredible affection in each other's eyes. And around them there's like a trumpet and a bass drum and just this mad flurry of instrumentation, and it was just this beautiful kind of celebratory, a little bit of that kind of polyphonic spree-ish, slightly cult hippie, but also just unmistakably joyful and wonderful. And by the end of their show, and I mean, again, it's like you just walk in, you've never heard of this band, you don't even know what they're called, and 15 minutes into it, I had a single manly tear trickling down my rugged face.
What's a manly tear? That's just one.
Just one. It's just one defiant tear.
it comes from way down in the duct that sort of sits there for many years and just waits for the perfect moment.
I mean, those who know me can testify that I am one tough dude. Otherwise, yeah. That I'm not at all a giant girl.
Every time I see you stroking your hair, I think what a manly guy Steven is.
So I also thought of the Arcade Fire when I saw this band. I thought of Arcade Fire, Polyphonic Spree, and I say these things because I just cause it's hard to give context, and also the music that's on the MySpace page that you might run and hear just doesn't do like a quarter or an eighth of the justice that this band deserves. They have like a 7-inch out.
They have a 7-inch out. They're still putting the finishing touches on a full-length album that comes out in July. It's very, very tricky to capture what is so great about this band, and I know it wasn't Mojito goggles or whatever. The first time I saw them, I was speaking of being manly, sipping a pink mojito and watching them. But
you journalist, you.
No. And so seeing them late at night, even with terrible sound, was just as blown away. Just a wonderfully joyous sound. What we're about to play, it's good, but it doesn't capture just how wonderful this band is. If you have a chance to see Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, I think they should put out a live DVD instead of an album.
Okay, let's hear it.
Ah.
I have to say that if this was one of the 1,083 songs, if this was number 1,084, I would have probably given it 2 stars and moved on.
Right.
So
I had the same reaction.
What can I say? Let's just hope that they managed to capture something on digits that is beyond what we're
honest
hearing
to God, now. I saw them twice.
Right. Yes, sure. If I wasn't with Steven, I would probably cut this part out of the show and just
Bob, back me up. You saw this band. Yeah,
they were great. I loved them. Carrie Brownstein, tell me someone you stumbled upon that absolutely fell for.
Well, I wouldn't say that I stumbled upon this because I was kind of dragged out to the French Legation Museum in the hopes of seeing this artist. But then the way that the day unfolded, which was really long and extended and a lot of false starts, I felt like by the end I was literally stumbling and then happened to see this person play. And his name is Miles Benjamin Anthony Robinson. And the aspect
you just
that I stumbled
made that up.
One of the aspects that I stumbled upon was his bandmates who Miles Benjamin Anthony Robinson.
Hey, I had Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. It's
M-Bar. M-Bar ran down to whack on a pinata after we waited like 2 hours to see him play. Meanwhile, his backup band went into a rendition of Single Ladies by Beyonce. And so I definitely stumbled upon that and was very excited. And then M-Bar got onto stage and played a really beautiful set, even though the guitar sound was awful. It was treble to 10, bass to 0, which is a sound that usually sends me running. But I stuck around, and since then, have been I bought his record and have been listening to it nonstop. And I believe this song is called "Buried Fed."
This is my last song about myself, about my friends, found something else to sing. Try and patch it up with tape and twine, babe, I just break everything that's mine. They wheeled out my casket, they said, boil it down your head. I said, oh shit man, I ain't even dead. I won't be buried for him. You know your friend who's a real yo-yo, and she's always crying and no one knows why. She's gonna be alright. Lost her best in a fuzzy fight, wasn't even drunk, just a little tight last night. And they took her to the doctor, fix her heart and heal her head. She said, God damn, I'm tired of being bled. Go save somebody else's. A friend of mine drank something fine, choked to death the first time last night. He said, find that thing you really need, come on down, you can't breathe, alright. Everyone will be there at the burial in your head, and a tear or two there. Gonna go, maybe in your home, and find someone else.
shit, man, I don't even care. Oh, I ain't fitting up here. Well, if another one is killing us, what if our victim was still alive? My, what a surprise. And shut the dust for rotten head. He got late, I don't care. Better late than never, dear.
Got this great build to
it. I was going
to
say, I'm really glad you let that play for a while, because that went from something that I kind of shrugged off to something I was really loving.
Yeah.
I really like songs that sound like they're barely holding themselves together. And that has a nice wooziness to it. You know, it feels like it may just fall apart at any moment as it kind of rambles along.
Did the live show resemble that at all?
He actually didn't play with drums, which I was disappointed in only later, because when I listened to his album, actually some of the songs do build like that and are more raucous. And I think his voice is a kind of a voice that can segue easily between a more folky, stripped down kind of blues sound up into the rock range really seamlessly without and effortlessly. And so on the album, it's interesting to see him navigate those two different styles. And then live, I only saw him do, you know, sort of a quieter, more stripped down version. So yeah, it didn't resemble that exactly, but he has an amazing voice, and all of his backup musicians sing really well. On the album, it's actually Kip Malone from TV on the Radio and Chris Bear from Grizzly Bear. And then Chris Taylor from Grizzly Bear recorded him. And they were the guys that kind of discovered him. He was living on the streets.
Miles, wow. Benjamin, okay. Anthony Robinson.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Wow. A little bit of Bon Iver to me. I don't know. Is it just me and a little bit of that song, or might you hear that in the sound at all, Gary?
I think so. I think in Bon Iver's sort of lower range, I think that there's some crossover there. But I feel like Miles Benjamin Anthony Robinson, he doesn't veer up into the heavens as much as Bon Iver. I think that he sticks with the grittiness, the corporeal grittiness a little bit more than Bon Iver.
Robin Hilton, I remember you telling me that you didn't expect to see Laura Marling, but she opened up for someone you quite love.
Jason Lytle. She was on before him. But I got
you like to, the way I set that up?
I actually got to the show early because I wanted to be sure that I could get the best seat. And turns out
on his lap.
It turns out it was very easy to get in, actually, and perhaps because it was already after 1 o'clock in the morning. But I wasn't expecting, we've had Laura Marling on the show before, and I thought she was nice. I never would have sought out her show while I was there, but I'm so glad I caught her. Because it was just gorgeous, and it was just her and some guy named Marcus Mumford, who's in a band called Mumford.
Anthony Robinson.
Oh, Mumford and Sons.
Mumford and Sons.
Sorry. Really good.
Oh, good band.
That's a terrific band.
I hadn't heard of them.
Maybe you should listen to Song of the Day.
This is the second time that you've told me that I need to listen to Song of the Day.
He does guess that I should get to me all the time.
Wait, you guys, what's Song of the Day?
Thank you, Carrie. God, I thought it was the only one. But she's from London, and she's just 18 or 19 years old, and she's been compared
just
to...
Just how you like them.
Good God. Pull
cut,
quote.
Cut, print.
Let's see if I can get back on track with this one.
Just let's play the song. Would you?
Well, I'll just say real quickly. This was at the Central Presbyterian Church, which
where
Jason Lytle played, and apparently everyone who was anyone played there, because this place always had lines down the block waiting to get in.
It's a wonderful venue.
Yeah, and it was just a perfect space for her to play in. So the song we're going to hear is called "Ghosts," and it's actually from her album "Alas, I Cannot Swim."
He walked down a busy street, staring solely at his feet, clutching pictures of past lovers at his side. Stood at the table where she sat and removed his hat in respect of her presence. Presents her with the pictures and says, "These are just ghosts that broke my heart before I met you. These are just ghosts that broke my heart before I met you." Opened up his little heart, unlocked the lock that kept it dark. Read a written warning saying, "I'm still mourning over ghosts, over ghosts, over ghosts, over ghosts that broke my heart before I met you." Lover, please do not fall to your knees. It's not like I believe in everlasting love. He went crazy at 19, said he lost all his self-esteem and couldn't understand why he was crying. He would stare at empty chairs, think of the ghosts who once sat there. The ghosts that broke his heart, oh, the ghosts that broke my heart. The ghosts that broke his heart, oh, the ghosts that broke my heart. The ghosts, the ghosts, the ghosts, the ghosts, the ghosts, the ghosts, the ghosts that broke my heart before I met you.
I like that song.
Yeah, you hear it said all the time with younger artists who are really good. Oh, you know, they're playing beyond their years. But I mean, there really is a wisdom and maturity to her songs that really I would not expect they were
voice,
from a teenager.
Her voice is really fully formed. She's really found her voice.
Did you say what at the church did she play by herself? Did you?
It was with Marcus Mumford. Yeah, and
Anthony
it was
Robinson.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful harmonies together. It was just perfect.
So my Saturday night was equal to Stephen's Saturday. Saturday was a great day of music when you guys weren't there anymore.
Yeah.
So I knew I had a good night coming. I knew I was going to go see PJ Harvey. I knew I was going to go see Ponytail, both who I was really looking forward to, and there would be a lot of energy. And then I'd gotten this text message from Stephen about this Edward Sharpe thing that led me to believe that the end of the night was going to be pretty darn good, too. But I had nothing to do for a little bit of time after PJ Harvey, and went and saw a group called the Shackletons that a friend of mine had told me about, and I didn't really know what to expect at all. And when I got there, the singer Mark Redding was standing on a chair with a lot of flowers, and he said, "This is just my sound check." And the sound check was better than any music I'd seen all day, maybe even all week. He was just amazing, and he just ripped these flowers to shreds and throw them to the audience. And that was just a sound check.
And then he levitated and floated into the sky.
He leapt off his chair. He eventually picked up the drummer and carried the drummer around. And they were just such a full bundle of energy. Does anyone know Lance Loud? Does anyone know the group The Mumps? I've totally dated myself.
Okay. You're telling
the Mumps. I know
The Mumps were... Lance Loud was a... It doesn't matter. He's a great performer. He was in this... one of the first what you'd call reality shows, which was this sort of documentary of... of video cameras in a family called the Loud family. That was the name of the family. Lance was one of the kids. He was sort of the rebellious one, and he'd started a band in the late 70s, and he had this very theatrical energy on stage. It just drew you in. Well, this fellow, Mark Redding, did the same. They're a Chambersburg, Pennsylvania band, and let's play a song from them. And what are we going to play? I can't remember.
Your Movement. Great. By their self-titled album.
Great. Wonderfully charismatic performer. His words were quite wonderful, and And the whole band was good and a really young, fantastic.
There was a little bit of Arcade Fire in that one, too.
Huh.
I thought so, too.
That's funny. I hadn't thought that.
Yeah, definitely.
But I hear it. So that's the Shackletons. So those are bands we sort of stumbled upon. The Shackletons was mine. Miles Benjamin Anthony Robinson was Carrie's. Laura Marling was Robbins, and Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. I was wondering, at the South by Southwest Music Festival in 2009, the most memorable band that you came upon that you're sure you'll listen to all year long. And let's start with Carrie.
So Crystal Stilts was a band that I had wanted to see, and I liked their album okay, but I wanted to see them live, and they showed up really late. Supposedly, they didn't know they had a show. So I was feeling anxious, like, I'm not gonna like this band. Why didn't they know they had a show? What are they doing in Austin if they're not going to be playing South by Southwest? But they got onto stage, and as they were setting up their gear, you know, there was the guitar player with the giant kind of Velvet Underground glasses, and the keyboardist who sets up like a keyboard the size of like a pencil case or something, and but
a very rickety
tall
stand too.
Yeah. Anyway, I knew that I could just put aside their mishap of being late and love this band, and I did. They started, and I thought the singer Brad Hargett had so much more of a range live, and his eyes kind of roll back in his head. It's a little bit, you know, Ian Curtis, Joy Division, but he has his own thing, and he really seems consumed by the music, and the whole band gets really lost, and it's, you know, reminds me a little bit of the New Zealand stuff in the 80s, like the Chills or the Clean, but they definitely have their own sound, and it's so much more melodic than it comes across on the album, because it is also droney. This is a song called Crystal Stilts, and the band is Crystal Stilts.
How would you describe the difference between the live and that's the song you just were hearing from the studio record?
I think there's more explosions in their live act. I think that it's a kind of sound that can be come across a little bit staid in a recorded context, and live there's just more room to kind of climb inside the songs, and it just has more dynamics, I think. Like, I felt like it was much more sort of danceable, and I could get a little more lost in it in the live setting. And I do like the records, and in fact, after seeing them live, I've gone back and listened to, I think they have a full length and an EP, and I've been enjoying them much more since seeing them live, which I think is a common thing to have occur, is you realize there's something more to a band once you see them live, and then there's a new way into the recordings. Yeah, I think it's just more, it's bigger.
I saw them at the something called the Spider House Cafe, and it was outdoors. It's kind of like an outdoor patio, and it was really sunny outside, and boy, it didn't work, you know. They couldn't overcome it. It was kind of like the werewolf out in the sunlight. It just
I can see that. They kind of are werewolves. I saw them in basically a dark tin shed. Yeah. And
you can't pin flowers to a group like that.
It's like that song sounded like surfer rock meets My Bloody Valentine or something.
Yeah. I definitely heard the Joy Division.
Yeah, that too, the little Joy Division.
Yeah, I didn't get the surf vibe at all live. I hear it in that song for sure. But yeah. Robin Hilton, who did you find most memorable?
I would certainly say the most memorable for me personally was the Decemberists. we're not going to play anything from that show, but we do have the full concert from them debuting or premiering their new album.
Can I just, I'll interrupt you just 1 second, sure. Because we have two podcasts, and sometimes people get confused. A lot of the concerts from South by Southwest, like the Decemberists that you mentioned, is in the All Songs Considered Live concert podcast. And then there's this podcast that we did a lot of the updates from, and so forth. So if you're not hearing any of the concerts and wondering where the heck you guys keeping them, on the website, of course, NPR.org or NPR Music.
NPR.org/music.
Or NPRmusic.org.
There you go. And either one of those or on the All Songs Considered Live concert podcast.
There were obviously a lot of memorable moments. That was a big one. Seeing the phenomenal Handclap Band was a big one. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But I'm going to go with Richard Swift, who was a singer we featured on the show a few years ago. And I kind of went just because it was a good time for me to catch a show. I didn't have anything else going on, and I was not expecting to love it as much as I did, but I really, really loved it. I said in one of our late night dispatches that he reminded me of a 21st century Harry Nilsson, and he's a little show busy sometimes in his music. He's got a new album coming out on April, I think it's April 7th, called The Atlantic Ocean, and I've got a cut from that. This is the last song. He closed with this song when I saw him live, and the vocals on this version don't really come out as well as they did hearing him live, but it's sort of a Motown soul sort of vibe to it. Lady Luck from Richard Swift. Moments where I actually, you know, you hear a band and you think they're a studio band or you think they're a live band, and this was a lot. His vocals actually sounded better live. He was a little more out front of the music than it is here, but he had a great falsetto and a great backup band too. I thought they were pretty tight. He recorded this album actually in Wilco Studios with Mark Ronson, and I read that he recorded the album on an analog tape machine that Jeff Tweedy sold him.
Which I'm sure was probably a pretty darn good
Probably tape a good machine, yeah.
We all saw Kanan at the NPR day party on Thursday, and people know that hip-hop and rap is not something I put on a every day or when I just have some free time. It's just, it doesn't speak to me well. Kanon has. We put him on a show about a year ago and brought him to our day party this year. And I figured I'd like him, you know, because I liked his music. But I didn't expect to see people crying. And I didn't expect to see hear about people in the chat room brought to tears.
It wasn't just me either.
That's right, exactly. These are not just the one single tear that Stephen has held.
It's so celebratory. Everyone in the room, when we saw him live, you know, waving their hands together, and yeah, it was really joyful.
And here's a guy with was born in Somalia, Mogadishu, and moved to Canada, and has, you know, he likes to sing songs about girls and having parties as much as anyone, but he also likes to sort of put things in perspective, and he does that perspective by talking about his home and the people he knew there and people who got hurt there. And he had, as he said, an entire audience of folks in Texas waving their arms to a song sung in his native language from Somalia, and even he was a bit taken aback. To the rear of the parish, which is where we had our show, it held about 300-400 people. In the back was a painting of Bob Marley, and on stage, Kanon talked about how he just recorded his record at Bob Marley's house, and you couldn't help but think about the spirit of why Bob Marley was so great. It wasn't that it was just a great reggae artist. It was that he managed always to bring a soulfulness that wasn't soul music, a soulfulness that spoke to the heart and was very universal, messages of love and compassion. All that stuff can seem trite and so forth, but after hearing a lot of music that didn't mean a lot to me,
right.
Boy, oh boy, it did hit me over the head and punch me in the belly, and I felt really great.
It punched you in the belly in a good way.
Knocked me out, stole my wallet.
And I loved every minute of it.
Left me for dead.
Let me find the spot in the Kanon show that was toward the end that had everybody in the house waving their arms, singing along.
Cry baby, move quick. We jump the wall and make it to home. And I'm still in shock when the door is open. My mama hits me, then pulls and kiss me. You want to die, I want to cry. But when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like. Born to a throne, stronger than Rome, but violent prone, poor people's own. But it's my home, all I have known, where I got grown, streets we would roam. Out of the darkness, I came the farthest, among the hardest survivors. Learn from these streets, it can be bleak, accept no defeat, surrender, retreat.
So we're struggling,
fighting to eat, and
we wondering
when we'll be free, so we patiently wait for that fateful day. It's not far away, but for now we say, when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a wave in the sky. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes. When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a wave in the sky. And then it goes back.
I got chills again. I don't know whether it conveys or not.
It was a really incredible moment, actually, seeing that live. It really knocked me out, too.
Yeah, I was just standing in the back of the room fussing with a bunch of other stuff. I had to file a piece for Morning Edition the next morning. So I'm like, I've got a laptop and all these plugs in, and I'm freaking out about this deadline. And at one point, I just stopped, just froze, and was completely swept away by it. And I was as far away from him as you could be in that room. It was absolutely incredible. I hate that we're sort of forced every now and then in these to just be like, trust us, this was great. Mm-hmm. You know, and you play it, and it doesn't fully convey how you get swept away in a moment like that.
Definitely, yeah, should definitely. See him live. Oh. Sorry.
Yes. No, I was just going to say it did have a very arresting quality, and it's not often that you see music that's a force to be reckoned with where you just can't be passive or ignore it. I mean, it really, yeah. It asks you to pay attention, and I think that that's rare and really valuable.
Can I ask you all a question? Because it was just this one fleeting moment for me during that set, as much as I loved it, where... if this had happened, you know, 15 years ago, I would have just said, "No, that's ridiculous." Which was this? Which was backing tracks in a live act. Maybe this is old hat. Maybe no one thinks twice about this anymore. But Canon had, you know, instruments that weren't being played on stage at moments that were, you know, part of a recording. I went and saw Loni Dyer. He did the cheapo version of that, which is he had an iPod on a stool.
with a spotlight shining on it.
The Decemberist show, there's a part towards the end where there's this children's choir, and people in the chat room were saying, how did they get these kids on stage? And it's like, it's just a tape. Yeah. They're just playing it.
Feelings?
I don't know. I thought about it a lot when we saw the Decemberists, and I couldn't come up with a way around it. Right. But, and they were debuting this entire album, so they really had to have that moment on stage. So I wasn't sure how they'd get around it. I don't know.
I kind of hate it, but I mean, there's so many bands that do that, and so many different, even across many genres. I think the most asinine version of that, though, is U2, who has an entire band under the stage.
What?
Playing, yes, this is true.
They're tied up under the floorboards.
Yes, they have band members that play under the stage so they can maintain the illusion of being a four-piece.
Oh,
that, to me, is the least
genuine
version of
that.
That and so everything next
to
that
we're going to get called on this, so I need to know, and people need to understand how you know that.
I know that from knowing people that tour with that band.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Was in that band, Bob.
Bob, I was in U2 for years. You might
under
not know
the
that.
Stage.
the edge actually crept up behind Carrie with some chloroform.
And, you know, that's just one way of going about it. But I prefer somebody to have an iPod on stage than that, you know, than maintaining the illusion of sort of, you know, authenticity. Like, oh, we're still a four-piece, and we're keeping these people under the stage that you'll never see.
I mean, there's also, obviously, many of the acts playing this festival, many of the acts we listen to all the time. I mean, the act consists of a guy with a laptop. You know, so how...
Well, I don't like that. I don't like that very much.
I'm not saying that that's preferable. I'm just saying that, you know, the line is already so blurry.
Anyway, just food for thought. Maybe we'll do a little blog post on backing... we call them backing tracks, right?
Yeah, you know, I think as there are more and more tools available for artists to do everything by themselves. I mean,
I think the only thing I don't like about it is that it locks the musicians into a length of performance, and it kind of stifles spontaneity jamming. And I think some artists get around that by having it be more of a trigger that the drummer sets off or the keyboardist sets off, as long as it maintains a fluidity in the set. But what I don't like is, well, we know the song is going to be this length and not deviate too far from the recorded version because there's so many backing tracks that we can't deny that.
It does set an exact chart for a song. In a way,
and that's the only thing that I find to be limiting in a live context is because you're kind of there hoping for something that's going to deviate or surprise you, and if you know that there's not going to be too many elements that can surprise you, that's a little bit disappointing.
Biggest regrets, bands you want to see but couldn't.
Dan and Aykroyd.
You didn't see Dan and Anna?
I did not. They were opposite one of our parties.
Wow.
I hung out. I met one of them briefly.
Did they hug you?
They did not hug me. What gives? They just wanted to
hug
me.
Did they hug you?
I got a hug.
Tell us about that.
Weren't you engulfed by Dan and Anna Aykroyd at one point?
Yes, I was
oh, right,
inside
you told
them.
The story. Tell the story again for those who missed the podcast.
So I was over at the Jag Jaguar Dead Oceans Secretly Canadian Showcase, and there were some kids in front of me with some real fetching Glaswegian accents. And of course, I had to just pipe in and let them know that I knew they were from Scotland, which is a really annoying thing that I do. Hey, are you guys Australian? I knew that. So I was chiming in about them being from Scotland, just impressing them with my worldliness. And they said, oh, hey. And then they had asked actually earlier to take a picture of me. I'm sure they recognized me from NPR. And and then I said, are you guys in a band? Because you all look so cute, and so much cuteness can only be stuffed into a band. And they said, well, we're in Dan and Anna and Aykroyd. And I just, my jaw dropped, and I said, we previewed you on our NPR South by South preview show. And they were so excited, and hugs ensued.
Oh. I got a little choked up.
Steven, your manliness is on the line. You've cried like four times in this broadcast.
But nobody heard. Nobody went and saw him.
No.
You know, I got to say, of the people, I've talked to a lot of people who listened to that preview show, and the one that everyone kept asking me about was Dan and Anna and Aykroyd. And obviously the name is part of it, and I'm sure the adorability is part of it. But, man, they're taking off. Dan and Anna and Aykroyd mania.
Robin Hilton, band you wanted to see, couldn't see?
There were so many I wanted to see and didn't get to see. But probably the number one band that I wanted to catch and couldn't was Juicifer. And Juicifer is a band that they've been around a good while now, about 10 years or so, and they're from Athens, Georgia. And I haven't seen them in many, many years and was really looking forward to getting to see them again. They're basically the White Stripes. If you reverse the roles, she plays guitar, he plays the drums, and they're about 10 times louder.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, I said ow.
And meaner.
And meaner, too, yeah. But I love this band so much. And I've got a track here. This is from their album called Calling All Cars on the Vegas Strip. The song is called Malibu.
Gebruiker van de verdrinkingsdood gered. De man was door te hoge snelheid uit de bocht gevlogen en omgekeerd in het water terechtgekomen. Passerende automobilist is de vraag gekant. De man ging het schuif dat te bevrijden. Voor de kust van Katwijk is de fiets op de 152 en aardoor op kapzij weer gezoekt.
Carrie, what did you think of Juicifer? Had you heard them before?
No, I've heard of them for years and years.
Yeah, they've been around a long, long time. Yeah. Maybe 15 years.
And I don't think I've ever
them. I think I've edited 400 concert previews for that band. They used to play Madison about six times a year.
Is that your way of saying you don't really care for it, Carrie?
No, I thought that it sounded good. I feel like I need to catch up and go see them. So I will.
Well, see that you do.
Yeah, get cracking.
So I know everyone's going to give you the hardest time in the world about the phenomenal hand clap band, Carrie. I just want you to know that I never wound up seeing Mikachu and the Shapes with all the talking I did about them. Though we did record a video of Mika Levy, which we'll try to get up online the week this show goes out online, too. We had a lot of fun. We'll come back to the phenomenal hand clap band in a minute, but we had a lot of fun shooting videos. Robin Hilton and I in particular went out. Let's recap the ones we did. We did the first one we did.
Well, we did Mikachu at 10 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. What a
looking
sight
all
to
ragged
see,
out
too.
And, yeah.
and it's part her style, which is, you know, don't comb the hair at all, please. And also the fact that we were at the fanciest of hotels, the Driscoll, who had the place we set her in had been rented out for a wedding. Right, so there was these gorgeous flowers and just beautiful colors behind her,
and all these tables laid out.
And she was very punkish looking, with a bedhead, and she has this way when she sings and says things emotional. She really scrunches her face up and makes all these weird little gestures, and it was really fantastic. And in fact, in the middle of her performing, the people knocked on the door from the wedding and they wanted to see the room, and we had to tell them to wait a minute. So that's one video we did. We did a Mira,
Jason, Lytle, Asha.
Now you shot that one by yourself,
the Jason Lytle.
I just, you know, just saying, the Asha,
and he was never seen again.
The entire time, Robin was resting his chin in his hand and gazing up at him the whole time.
PJ Harvey
and the PJ Harvey,
yeah,
which I suppose we'll get to later in the show. So
let's listen to the Mikachu.
You want to listen to the Mikachu? Sure. Yeah.
And you guys also did Saint Vincent, didn't you?
Yes, Saint Vincent.
Yeah, we'll talk about her too. Let's listen to Mikachu.
This is one of the songs. This is the last of three songs she did for us. It's from her upcoming album. It's called the song's called Floor.
It's really nerve-wracking to defend your own.
She was a trip.
First of all, she came and for, you know, all the things that her, that these managers and so forth have to juggle, somehow got mixed up and thought she was doing an interview. So she didn't come prepared to sing anything. And then when she did,
By the end,
she wound up playing that wedding.
Those people have already gotten divorced.
Yeah. But, and now here's the chicken dance.
She played with this guitar. It's the most loosely defined guitar I think you could imagine. It was either a child's guitar or a toy guitar. These nylon strings that looked like they were barely connected to it. I think of all the artists I love who, you know, very meticulously tune in between every song, and they've got it plugged into a digital tuner to get it just right. And she never brought any of those sorts of toys or tools out but she kept tuning and retuning it in between the songs. And I thought, what are you tuning it to? It's not even, I don't even know what those notes are.
But all that is fishing line tied to an oatmeal can.
I mean, it was essentially that. Yeah. And but she made the most wonderful songs out of it. The first one was a bit of a challenge. I think it wasn't terribly excessive, but each one got a little more accessible.
That's Mika Levy, Mikachu and the Shapes, a band I missed, and Kerry Brownstein. How the heck did you miss the phenomenal hand clap band? I mean, if I'm going to give you the hard time because they're going to give you the harder time.
I know. I don't exactly know how. I think that the first day that I missed them, I decided for some reason to go to see a Kill Rock Stars showcase, thinking that I would be able to see them that evening. Then we had a production meeting in preparation for the Decemberist show. So
this is just sounding like an apology to the band. Like you're trying to explain to them what happened.
And do you know that on the blog, I have invited the Phenomenal Hand Clap Band to play my backyard.
Oh, your backyard.
Wow. This summer, I will provide drinks, barbecue, a stage. Portland,
a crowd,
dogs, including dogs and people.
That sounds awfully enticing. How much does a plane ticket from D.C. to Portland?
I will do a fundraiser to get them to Portland, and then they will play my backyard, and I will set up a real show for them as well.
You know, there are nine of them. I mean,
I thought there were 23 of them. So
at least when I saw them, there were nine of them.
Have you heard from them? Did they comment back on your?
No, but they will be commenting after this show, won't they? Phenomenal Hand Clap Band.
Let the record show that I texted you, Kerry, from the Phenomenal Hand Clap Band, saying, I'm seeing the Phenomenal Hand Clap Band, coming to the Phenomenal. And you blew me off. You said no.
I did not blow you off. I wrote back. I did not blow you off one time in Austin, did I?
I know.
And if you could learn how to spell in your text messages, I might have known that you were going there.
Oh, that's low.
For an editor, that is low.
That is so low.
I
punctuate my text messages.
You're a good texter. When you're sober, you're a really good texter.
Oh. Wow. I know we played this and we've talked about them before, but I'd love to hear this band again.
Yeah,
I saw them with Steven too. And they were great.
It
was so good.
No, for the record, I had a fantastic time hanging out with Steven Thompson.
Oh, that's so nice
I
of
did.
You. I had a fun time hanging out with you.
What about me and Bob?
And with
no,
Robin
she
and
did
Bob.
Not say, no, she did not say she had a fun
yes,
time.
Yes, I did.
Anyway, this is the Phenomenal Hand Clap.
wait. What song are we playing? What song are we playing?
The song is Testimony.
Oh, this is a new one.
Why don't you start while this is playing in the background, because we've heard them before, Robin, describe what's on stage, and Steven, too, describe what's on stage to Kerry.
Two fabulously beautiful singers, with these big sunglasses, like a superstar, rock star at a keyboard in the center stage, this funked out bass player.
And then a guy who looks like he was transported in from the band Kansas.
That was the dude who was the bass player I'm thinking of, right?
Yeah.
And they were just so trippy and wonderful.
It really looked like three different bands. All got triple booked. Yeah. So they decided to play at the same time.
They're going
to
make it work. Yeah. We can make this work.
It really did, though.
This song, and this has taken me back. to all of a week ago. And
this is taking me back to nothing, is it?
What a ride.
It was so good. They did the song, and I forgot to mention that the two women who are singers are...
You mentioned the two women who were
well,
singers.
Well, they were also
like four
on
times.
Perfectly synchronized tambourine duty, too, which yeah. is...
I thought you were going to say perfectly shaped.
And Bob, you
every
know,
time I saw two tall women at a show, I thought... I mean, in the audience, I thought, are those two women?
They're very, they looked very tall from yeah. at least where we were standing. But, you know, Bob, earlier today we were talking about things that we noticed. One of the things you said you noticed is that a lot of bad drummers at South by Southwest yeah. this year. And I thought this was a particularly good drummer.
Yes.
I really loved this drummer a lot.
Very this, I mean, the Tom Tom Club was the closest thing I can think of to as a point of reference for me. And because they were so rhythm driven, and so that was one thing. But yeah, there were an awful lot of bad drummers for me at this festival, and it really took down a lot of bands.
I know. I feel like we need to have a podcast about this, Bob, because I mentioned bad drumming in my most recent blog, and somebody said, somebody commented and said, "What is bad drumming?" And what do you mean by that? And I just thought, isn't it obvious yeah. what bad drumming is?
You know it when,
but
it's
maybe
like pornography.
It's not.
I know it when I hear it.
I didn't really notice it out of all the shows. In fact, the only time I even noticed a drummer at all was seeing this band and thinking, wow, he's really good. And I didn't really notice
the drummer needs to really drive the bus,
right.
you know? And oftentimes they just do the same stuff that you'd expect. When I saw the Antlers perform in D.C. before we came to South by Southwest, it was just the week before, their drummer, which doesn't shine on the record as much, was just absolutely phenomenal. I thought, this is why this band works so well. It really makes a difference between a good band and an okay band. If you're going to form a band, just because the drummer has a van isn't the reason to put him in the band. Okay?
He's
got
to
get
money.
That straight. Yeah. He might have the practice space and he might have the van, but that's not the reason.
Yeah.
Oh, one other trend that I saw that I just wanted to know if anybody else saw just a couple of trends, any of those you want to think of. But when I was thinking of drummers, I was also starting to think about the idea of community in music. And it happened a bunch of times. The Akron Family, the Shackletons, Kanon.
Edward Sharp.
Events in music where you're either encouraged to hold the hand or look into the eyes of your neighbor, or you just do because you're in so full of joy. In the case of Edward Sharp, they might not have asked you to sing along or dance along or hold your partner's
I'm
hand.
I'm so glad I missed that.
I held Bob's hand the entire time.
That was the microphone.
He kept brushing it aside.
And it was... But I really love that, and I don't know if anybody else saw that, or I just happened to go to four shows that did that, or there were any other things that, I mean, there was a 60s vibe I saw a lot in bands, and I certainly saw that in the Phenomenal Hand Clap band with that sort of sound they had. I saw this band called Donkey, who is, in fact, Geronimo Jackson, the band that plays the fictitious band on the show Lost, is really this band called Donkey, and they had a very 60s sound. Anyway, other trends?
Well, I think tapping into what you were describing with trying to foster a sense of community, I think part of it is, and I'm sure it's what a lot of these bands do every time they play, but when you're playing at South by Southwest, there are 1,800 bands. There's only a certain number of things that are going to make a band stand out to you.
And you've got 20 minutes maybe to
yeah,
do it.
And you know 20 you know 40 max. And so if you're going to stand out in people's minds, I think if you can trigger an emotional connection in people, that's a pretty efficient way to do it. And you know, I know, you know, one thing I always react really well to is when a band puts together a successful sing along. If they can successfully make an entire room full of people sing along, that's I'm gonna take that away from that show. I'm gonna remember that.
Yeah.
You know, Colin Malloy is really good at that, and I wondered if he was just tortured during their live set for us because they've had to play the entire album. He didn't say a word
right.
during that entire performance until it was all done. He came out and said, "Well, that was a lot of work," and then he finally got to engage the audience for the first time.
That's
and
true.
I always think of him being one of the most engaging singers I've ever seen, and he couldn't do that because he couldn't interrupt the flow of the album.
No other trends?
I noticed a tremendous amount of skanks there, and also cowboy boots with skirts. Do those count as trends?
A tremendous amount of skanks. That's the name of my
Robin,
band.
Robin, end the show. End the show right now.
Don't tell me you didn't notice.
I blogged about it.
Oh, did you?
I said that I kept wondering, is that a belt or a skirt you're wearing? Because I cannot tell the difference.
Seriously.
Did you walk up and just say, let me tell you something, Missy?
Yeah. No, I did notice one trend, Bob. You were saying that what band were you saying had a real 60s vibe?
Group Donkey, but the Phenomenal Hand Clap.
Phenomenal Hand Clap Band. Well, actually, what I thought with the Phenomenal Hand Clap Band, it's kind of hard to say, is that they were this perfect mix of all of the past 40 or 50 years of popular music. And that's something that, you know, you used to be able to say very easily, well, we're in a period now where all bands are revisiting the 70s or all bands are revisiting the 80s now.
Good point.
And now it is just this total mix of all these sounds. It's completely blurred now.
That's great.
And yeah, it does. I think music is all the better for it. It's true.
Special moments. I know that Stephen Thompson, you worked hard on trying to have PJ Harvey come and give us a private concert, and God, it almost
our jobs are terrible.
I know, but it was actually almost fell through the cracks.
Yeah, we almost didn't make it work, but we managed to get again in the Driscoll Hotel. We managed to arrange a private performance by PJ Harvey and John Parrish, her guitarist, and they've got an album coming out together. And it was just a shot in the dark. You know, we've been gathering up these video sessions. You guys were gathering these video sessions. I was off seeing bands. And it wound up coming together at the last minute. They sat down in this empty ballroom in front of sort of a fireplace.
Yes, it was the Jim...
The Jim Hogg room of the Driscoll Hotel. And John Parrish, just very, very snappily dressed, just sat there with his guitar. And PJ Harvey...
National Steel, which was a beautiful...
With National Steel. And Polly Jean Harvey cut this very otherworldly figure. She seemed very shy and a little nervous and didn't make a lot of eye contact. So she sort of seemed like this frail little alien in the room.
Not to tell, I'm not going to tell this whole story, but basically there was some reason that they thought when they got there, the manager thought when they got there, that they wanted to know where the mixing desk was, which is a British term
for the studio.
They wanted a board. They wanted to, you know, plug into the board. And all we had was we had a high def camera and a really nice microphone, and
microphone. We looked like we just looked like a bunch of amateur schmoes. It was so sad.
And so, basically, we thought they were out of here. You know, they weren't going to do it. But the manager brought up the idea to them, and they wound up coming and doing this. And it was the first time the manager said that they've ever done anything like this, which is to play without being put into a board or something. And Polly Jean Harvey sat down next to John. She had this little tiny Fender amp that she must have just gotten. Must have been her new toy.
Tiny, though. Yeah, it could sit on her lap.
It wasn't much bigger than a juice box.
Right.
Yeah.
And then and plugged a microphone into it, had it on full distortion, and sang this incredible song in just not even a practice. I mean, it was almost
the thing that's so funny about this is that, you know, talking with the manager beforehand, it was like, oh no, this probably isn't going to happen now. But yet they couldn't have been better prepared. They had absolutely everything they needed to make the most beautiful music imaginable, to pull this off perfectly, and by accident. Yeah, in one take, too.
Let's hear it. It's called California, obviously, when you hear it.
Leaving you today.
was a moment. That was such a moment. I'm just thinking about it again, how so amazing that was.
Tell people how they're going to be able to see this, because we did shoot video, and we was, I mean, I said private concert.
Yeah, it wasn't, we'll it wasn't like,
we did, and we did none this of you for you all, you know. I mean, well,
never,
we do for us
ever,
too,
ever will you ever see or hear this.
Oh, man, you guys are so sad you can't see that.
No, we did shoot video. She did two tracks. They were both amazing, and because this was sort of the first time they'd ever done anything like this, we told PJ Harvey and her manager that they could, and John Parrish, that they could look at it first and make sure they were cool with everything. But we're going to hope to get that up for you this week.
Okay, and we have two songs.
Yeah, two tracks.
Robin Hilton, special moments.
Oh, so many special moments.
I know, it must have.
Just the time we spent together.
Oh, God, I love you guys.
I love those Two in the Morning podcasts. And if you folks haven't heard, they are nice summations of our
they
day.
They got blearier and blearier.
Well, they also got
the
later and later. That's
I can't believe you guys did your last one basically at dawn.
It was.
It was 5 in the morning.
You know something? We walked, Stephen and I, because of the way the show got so late, it was also a late show to begin with, and then it got delayed an hour. When we came back to the hotel, we walked across 6th Street, and there was nobody on 6th Street. I'd never seen that.
Oh, what a relief.
Yeah, it was kind of nice, I gotta say.
The air was finally clearing. Jason Lytle, of course, was probably my favorite moment, being able to shoot video of him doing a few songs with Rusty Miller, who is the singer for a band called Jackpot and is touring as a vocalist, backup harmonies and guitar with Jason Lytle's band right now. And they did two songs from Jason Lytle's new album, Yours Truly, The Commuter. And then they did this third song, which is actually a granddaddy song, the band that Jason Lytle was in before. And the reason I'm going to play it is because I think the thing that's greatest about Jason Lytle's songs is that he's such a great storyteller. And this song is called Derek Spears, and I just love the story. So let's just listen to the whole thing so that we get to the end of the story, because you always want to get to the end of his stories.
Great. And you always want to. And you always want to play more of your song than anybody else.
Right.
Here we go.
Slept outside the yogurt hut on a painted curb, wearing nothing but some cutoffs and a muscle shirt. At 5 a.m. the donut girls came quietly to work. When they slid the trays and banged the bowls, you woke up with a jerk. 32-ounce soda to start the day off right. Every now and then remembering little things about last night. Hold on, take 5. Check out the Fox and the Corvette. And then he said, you know, it don't get much better than that. Spent all his money on an ornate waterbed. Had a carving of a tiger right above his head. And he's embarrassed of the fact that he works at Pizza Shack. He said he made $90,000 a year until he hurt his back. And the money his sister owes him, his brother has, but he's in jail. And I'm sure there'll be a check arriving any day now in the mail. But mysteriously that check won't show. And that sticky boombox by the door will end up getting sold once more and for a lot less than before.
pull if our heels were in time.
He's talking about, we played in this cavernous area of the Driscoll Hotel, and this woman clomped by in high heels. So he was saying it would have been cool if she had been walking in time. But that's why it's, you could hear all those other sounds in the in the background. That's
how it added to it.
Yeah, it's too. I want to record an album there.
That's a really pretty rare Granddaddy song, actually. It was never released on any album, so it was a real treat to hear him do that.
For you. That was great.
Just for you.
Just for Rob.
For everybody, and now we've given it to the world.
Thanks for sharing that, Robin.
Yeah,
I'm surprised
Robin,
you were able to let
person.
That go.
I had to work really hard.
Did you have special moments, Carrie?
I did. One of my special moments came early on when I saw a Brazilian band called Garota Suecas that I don't think I've ever actually mentioned on one of our podcasts, but I have written about a couple times on the Monitor Mix blog. And they were a band that I first wrote about in January, and I just was so proud of them finally getting to go to South by Southwest, playing a handful of shows and really generating a lot of excitement. I saw them, I think it was the first day I was there, and they didn't play to that many people at the show. They were playing 3 shows a day.
Yeah. They played a lot.
How did I miss this?
I saw them. They were great.
They played about 3 shows a day, and they just were tireless, and they put on a great show. And this song is called Boogaloo.
And we spoke about bands that have the 60s and 70s in it. And even 90s, and I'll skip the 80s, and so we can get more mail about our 80s show. But this is certainly one of those bands, isn't it?
For sure, yeah. Definitely conjures Brazilian psychedelic music from the 60s.
Great.
Você precisa.
Off the tables.
That was my favorite live too. That was
wow.
Oh, I love that.
Was that when they did the coordinated stage move at that point? And they all. It was so amazing. I mean, when Robin talked about who was the artist you played from England that was only 19?
Laura Morrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just her being beyond her years musically. I mean, these guys are also 19 to 24.
Wow.
And they were so adorable.
They're adorable, but they're
seriously
music.
Though, I thought these guys were like in their 30s or 40s and been playing for 15 or 20 years.
Their musical vocabulary is immense for young people, and their transitions in their songs, they modulate keys all the time. I mean, it's it's pretty amazing. And I want to say that they were written about in the New York Times, but NPR, we were talking about them back in January. So you heard it here first.
Why didn't we do this band? Why didn't we do this band on our show?
Oh my gosh, we are not going down this path, are we?
I was thinking
there's a lot of hate down this.
I was thinking, Carrie, beforehand, it's like, oh, surely we've played them because I was remembering all the talk we had about them, but it was all about whether or not to get them on the showcase. And
yeah, that would have been fun too.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
We'll never ignore
Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
We'll never ignore Carrie again.
Oh come on, we all. I think we all had our pet bands and. I think they did fine. But next year.
And that showcase, that whole showcase is up online.
The NPR
which features Stephen and Carrie. The showcase features
Tao Win and the Get Down, Stay Down.
Blind Pilot.
Blackjacks.
Kanon.
Dirty Projectors.
And Blitz and Trapper.
And we also had the Wednesday night showcase, which was the Decemberists, the Heartless Bastards, and Ava Brothers.
And the Heartless Bastards were just fantastic. We had talked about where to put them, little stage, big stage, and they shone on that.
Can you
big
imagine
stage.
Them on a little tiny stage?
Oh, they were perfect on a big stage. Erica Winstrom, just fantastic singer. Just
I said this before, they were louder than the Decemberists. I love that. They were so loud.
And the Avett Brothers, they had these sound problems and stuff. I think they had their moments. I think they were a little off balance. I need to go back and listen to that concert because I'm not sure if the moments of sound problems at the beginning clouded my emotion about it or whether their performance. So.
I think the other thing that clouds, and I do still highly recommend listening to that show, and that's one of my favorite bands and one that I really pushed to put on that bill. But if you listen to the podcast, there are these women in the front row. I don't know if you guys heard them in the booth, but they're plainly audible in the podcast. And they're just shrieking between songs. You guys are dreamy! You're
Wait,
so
was that Robin?
Hot! And it was Robin Hilton.
I'd thrown my shirt up on stage.
So it's apparently...
Yeah, they've got a fantastic fan base. If you were in a band, you'd want their fan base, for sure.
Well, I really...
They work at it, too.
They're amazing. Amazing. Yeah, I really want to do more with them and get an on.
Me too. Well, this summer they probably will tour with their new record and so forth. And they only wound up doing one song. That
one
whole
new
sound
song,
check pushed their a bunch of new songs. They were going to do two. And so they anyway, this summer
you can still hear them play one new song from the album that's coming out this summer. You can hear that on that podcast. So,
and it's also on the webpage npr.org/sxsw, where a whole bunch of coverage. Photographs, blog posts,
Twitter feeds
are all there. I went with Robin Hilton to see St. Vincent. We were thinking about how to sort of capture some of the color of a band preparing for South by Southwest, and we got invited to a rehearsal space about 5 miles outside of the main drag of Austin. And it was sort of a warehouse, and you went in this. It was set up as a studio, but it's basically
a bunch of practice rooms, a big long hallway with doors leading to practice rooms.
And there probably was, if you look down the hall, there was probably 30 or 40 doors. It was kind of dirty and seedy, so it kind of felt like a giant peep show or something. But behind the doors was music instead of something else that it might have been. And behind one of those doors was St. Vincent, Annie Clark, and her band preparing and practicing up new material for a performance they were about to do that night.
And I felt overworked and overbooked and didn't really want to go, and I've never been a huge fan of hers. And, man, you talk about biggest surprise. I absolutely loved her and her band, seeing them. I was converted immediately.
Yeah, the new bunch of songs is quite interesting, quite wonderful. She is a great guitar player. Mm-hmm. She puts together fairly complicated songs in terms of the structure and orchestration. Let's go out on a cut from St. Vincent called An Actor Out of Work. It's from a new CD that's coming out called Actor. It comes out on the 5th of May, I think, and if all goes right, we'll actually have one of our first listens with this record.
This is the live version that we have.
Yeah, this is them rehearsing it. I quite loved it. You should know that there are 10 songs from the artists that we featured, the bands we just mentioned, the Avett Brothers and Decemberists and all that, all available for free download. So that is on the site. You just click a button, you can get 10 songs from different bands. That's available. All the podcasts are still there from the shows and the blog posts. We'll get back to normal, other regular shows soon. And we have, what else we got coming up? We got any concerts coming?
Got some concerts we're working on.
Anything we can say yet?
No.
Not quite yet.
But pretty soon. Actually within
initials?
BEATLES.
Oh, really?
I can't say it out loud. no, actually, I think we can go ahead and say these. We're going to do Bob's favorite band and Carrie's favorite band, Mates of State.
Yes.
And I am am I out of town?
You are out of town, and
I'll work it.
You won't be able to do it. And also Nico Case is coming up.
And that's my birthday and I'm out of town.
Yes. I'm sorry you can't do that one.
Are we doing Crooked Fingers on that too?
They're
opening for Nico.
We'll work on it.
Robin, could you get cracking?
Yeah.
And we'll put up a blog post. I'm interested in a few things. One is, let's do a blog post that has to do with backing tracks in a live band. What the heck? And then
I'm sorry. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify about the U2 thing, that let's just say that I don't know that for sure, but it's a commonly held opinion that U2 has someone under the stage.
So we'll get onto normal stuff. So we'll do two blog posts, the one I mentioned, and then we'll do a blog post. I'd like to know people who discovered bands who maybe were in Austin or maybe through the podcast who fell in love with something because South by Southwest happened. And Carrie, do you have any blog posts that you want to talk about related to South by Southwest that you've done that maybe people can read and add to?
I did a kind of a summation of South by Southwest and kind of wanted to figure out why there was so much excitement about it this year. What was it that made not only the four of us extra enthusiastic, but I felt like there was just a heightened sense of enthusiasm for it. So I'm curious, were those essential qualities that made this year potentially better? And that is something I posted on Monday.
Great. Well, thanks, Carrie.
Thanks. I really had a fun time seeing you guys in Austin.
Yeah. Well, we did too, even though you bailed on us early.
No,
yeah.
I didn't.
Well, maybe
you shouldn't feel bad about it.
Well, we'll see you at the barbecue. Thanks for the plane ticket.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Okay. Let's go out on St. Vincent. I'm Bob Boylan, along with Stephen Thompson and Robin Hilton. And Carrie has left like she usually does a little bit early.
Not yet. I'm so sorry. Don't say anything mean about me.
It's all thoughts considered.
What is up with Carrie?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This song's called Actor Out of Work. You're a Superman. You're a South.